This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined, as always, by the Managing Editor, Andrea Lopez Villafaña. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
How are you?
Doing good. Highly caffeinated.
Good. Also here, of course, it's the star of the last few weeks, Jacob McQuinney. What's up, Jacob?
Star? What did I do?
You've done a lot of good things. I'm happy.
Well, I appreciate that.
And we met your father. He came in. He looks like he's an older brother. Very impressive. I'm going to talk to him about age. Looking better.
Yeah. Well, he was very excited to meet you.
He's quite a
fan of the podcast.
Well, Joaquin, it was nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in. Your son is doing okay. Coming up on the show this week, the penny for progress is moving forward. It's just a penny. Don't you want some progress? A 1 cent sales tax is being pushed by San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria and Councilman Raul Campillo at this week's Rules Committee. It voted to move that tax along. Now it'll be up to the city council to put it on the November ballot. Speaking of taxes, California voters could radically transform how local governments and the state can raise taxes, and it could have major implications for existing taxes, including proposals for new ones on the ballot. Finally, Voice environmental reporter Mackenzie Elmer has been following the saga of a broken sewage plant at the U.S.-Mexico border. It's an important one. Members of Congress are getting involved, and the price tag is swelling, but we have some updates. She'll explain what's wrong with the plant, what happened in Congress this week, and what they're going to do about it. We've got that and more coming at you this week. Stay with us. All right, we got a lot to talk about and a promotional thing to do here, but I just wanted to say the Padres are back, and everything feels right. They started their season in Seoul, South Korea, with games at 3 a.m. on Wednesday morning and 3 a.m. Thursday morning. Now, I got up for the Wednesday one because my daughters got up in the middle of the night and said, "Dad, let's watch the game." And I was like, "Okay."
You can't see him, but his face, it looks like he might tear his cheeks. You smile.
The easiest I've ever gotten out of bed. And they've gotten me out of bed for a lot of things over the years. A lot of really bad things. This was by far the greatest 3:30 or 4 a.m. wake up I have ever gotten. We went and we watched for a while. She ended up getting tired. They were ahead. And she said, "I got to go back to bed." I'm like, "Okay, fine." The moment she leaves, the worst possible thing happens to the Padres. Mm. Now, in baseball,
war.
Well, yeah. Famine.
Did you think like there's some sort of like, I got to go wake her up now. Like she's like
there was
lucky charm or
it
something.
Felt, yeah, I don't believe in that, but I do. Mm-hmm. And yes, everything was going pretty well. She goes to bed. Then suddenly there's runners. The Dodgers have runners on first and second base. And we have this thing in baseball and softball where something bad happens, like, "Oh, is there a hole in your glove?" It's like, "Eh." You know? It's like when you spill the milk and your mom's like, "Is there a hole in your lip?" Or whatever. But sure enough, a bouncing ball, not even a hard hit ball, goes to first baseman Jake Cronenworth. He backhands it perfectly, but the ball goes through the glove.
So in this
case, it literally ripped through the glove.
So there literally was a hole in the glove. It's not even a joke now.
No. And the runner from second ends up scoring. The Dodgers take the lead. They never lose it. And my daughter wakes up and says, "What happened in the game?" And I had to tell her there was a hole in Jake Cronenworth's glove. And she's like, "I don't believe
it." You're like, literally.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Wait, doesn't their hand... Clearly, say it. Never played baseball ever
in my life.
I want
you to say it. What is your question?
Isn't their glove like you put your hand in the glove?
Yeah.
Is the glove bigger than your hand?
Yes. It's very, it's a lot, especially first baseman's glove. They have a much bigger glove.
So it went through the part where his fingers were not.
No, there was no hole ripped.
What if his fingers broke?
So you're over here wondering if his hand like got a hole in it? That's just macabre. I love your mind sometimes.
I didn't realize that there were different size gloves. I played lacrosse for like a year in high school.
Yes, there's a catcher's mitt. They're big and padded.
Okay.
There's a first baseman's that is bigger, not padded. And then there's like outfield gloves that are bigger, infield gloves that are smaller so you can get the ball out quicker, stuff like that.
So there's not even a size difference. There's also a padding difference.
A lot of range, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Voice of San Diego podcast,
anyway,
where you come to learn
podcast
about baseball gloves.
By Rawlings Gloves, not Wilson. We will never buy a Wilson glove again.
Wilson.
Me and my homies hate Wilson.
It is the start of our spring fundraising campaign. We're trying to pull in 100 new members to the Voice community and raise $150,000. One of our favorite things ever, especially mine, is the Slack channel that shows all the gifts we get and the notes folks write when they give. If you donate and mention the show, we'll give you a little shout out. Here's a few.
Christopher N. says, "I really appreciate this team putting spotlights on homelessness and housing in San Diego. I also appreciate the detailed explanations of how local government works." Hey, got you.
Nice.
Is that Christopher Nolan, you think, the famous director?
It has to be. Yeah, he's donating part of his
Thank
Oppenheimer.
You. Yeah, congratulations
winnings.
This week.
Michael C. says, "I love the podcast and local news is important." We agree, Michael.
Karen B., "We need honest reporting of the news, and more news agencies are losing their investigating reporters. This is terrifying to me. We used to be able to count on news agencies to keep businesses and government representatives held to the light." We agree, Karen. Thank you for supporting.
Got you. And John W. says, "Local journalism is fundamental to an informed civic body, and I love the podcast. Scott, that's me, has always been a mainstay for me for years, and I quickly love everyone who joins the pod, including Andrea." And you can join us today.
Jacob!
Bastard.
Oh, it says Jacob, yeah. Too.
Yeah, and John, I forgive you for misspelling my name. Just know.
And join us today. Yeah, Jacob with a K.
Jacob with a K.
It's edgy. "If you give today, your gift will be matched by $5,000 that Voice supporters Gina and Ray Ellis and Laura Halgren put up. So those matching gifts help a lot. Thank you to the Ellis Halgren families. VOSD.org/give is where you can make contributions. VOSD.org/give. Thank you very much. We have some breaking news this week. The mayor, San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria, announced that he is going to nominate Scott Wahl to be the next police chief for the San Diego Police Department. Of course, Chief Nieslight is out or going out. He's going to ride into the sunset of police retirement.
What do people do when they retire? Read Voice of San Diego.
I think there was a story in the LA Times about all these LA police officers that have like basically created a town in Boise or in Idaho. So they have this little lake and they go fishing and they just they're able to take their you know comparatively impressive pensions to these places and get a lot of bang for their buck.
Mm. I got to be honest, Idaho is not where I would go to spend my golden years.
Well, I mean, if you like to shoot ducks and ski, it'd probably be pretty good.
I don't like to do those things.
Okay.
It's not for you, Jacob, with a K.
But Scott Wahl is not retiring. He is going to be, if the city council signs off, of course, on his appointment, that's important, he will be the next police chief. what do we know? We all know him. He was used to be the guy that journalists had to call to get information. So we got to know him pretty well over the last few years. Mm-hmm. But he's got a lot more going on.
He's had different jobs. So today on Thursday, as we're recording in the morning, the mayor had a press conference. Scott Wall was there, as well as council members Joe LaCava and Jen Campbell. Chief David Nislett was also there. And basically, Scott Wall is a 25-year veteran of the police department. He's lifelong San Diegan. He talked about, you know, his true love and passion for the city, but also for this department. I believe his father was also in the department. So he's had different job titles. He helped launch the department's neighborhood policing division in 2018 under former Mayor Kevin Faulkner, which was a division that mostly dealt with the homeless population. And it was both, you know, reaching out to them, making it clear that they could not be on the street, but, you know, trying to offer them services.
Yeah, I think that's the main message here. Like, the former Mayor Kevin Faulkner, again, is best known for two parts of the homeless crisis. One is the spread of Hep A and the sort of kind of lack of attention homelessness had gotten until 2017, when the spread of the hepatitis A was so severe that people were dying. And finally, all the filth and just problems on the streets just became like this prominent issue that it's always been since then. And the second part he's known for is this pretty intensive effort they went on to create temporary shelters for people to go, but also just to clean the streets and really try to sweep people out. And it was partly as a reaction to that that Mayor Todd Gloria ran. Now, Scott Wall was the principal person in charge of that sort of police approach to homelessness, and was very, you know, as the pandemic started, was just a very prominent member of the police force at that time. So it's a remarkable sort of endorsement by the current mayor of his previous predecessor's approach to this whole thing. Now, the cool thing about Scott Wall, and I'll say that, like, he's willing to go toe-to-toe with a journalist or a critic out there. He used to take people through the tours of the streets of what they're working on. Like, he's ready to talk and you know, face the music on a lot of these things. But the idea of a national search was once again belied by this. Like, they did a national search and they picked the guy down the street.
Well, I mean, you know, in the same way that San Diego Unified did, but you have to admit, I mean, down the street is part of this nation.
It is. It's true. Broadway Street is very close to C Street. And
both streets, importantly, are in the United States of America.
They are.
Yep. Gloria had posted on Instagram about that comment. He said, after conducting a national search and an extensive interview process, I'm appointing Assistant Chief Scott Wall as the next chief of police for the SDPD.
Yeah, it's like like Trump being like, I've done this amazing search and I believe that the top advisor of my administration in this country is my daughter. It just happens to be that after this search.
It's also like that kind of like rom-com, you know, moment. Mm-hmm. Like, you look for love everywhere and you realize that it's been the person standing right in front of you this whole time.
Literally the assistant chief.
I guess the best one is Dick Cheney saying, like, we need to find a vice president to run with President George W. Bush. And he's like, turns out it's me.
I found him. I looked
in the
mirror.
Perfect
dude is standing right there. Who knew?
Did a whole search, did a lot of interviews, and came out with this realization that, you know, it's right here, right in front of us the whole time.
But in their search, they did get 56 applicants. So,
okay.
You know, he was the best out of those.
Well, we'll see if the city council proves. It sounds like there's enough. He probably wouldn't put it forward without enough support. And there's going to be a lot of challenge that the morale of the police department is still low. There's still all of this concern about what they're allowed to do or what they're not doing that they are allowed to do, or just the lack of response times, the trouble recruiting people. Mm-hmm. But the mayor has long done almost everything they've ever wanted: raises, benefit protections. The only thing they can really point to that he was pretty insistent about was the vaccine. Mm-hmm. That he wanted them to take for the COVID. Do you remember COVID?
I have a vague memory. Yeah.
So they were not pleased about that. So we'll see if he's able to change the morale in the course of the department.
Two main points that Wall made. One was he made it very clear, and he kept repeating how, like, Gloria was dedicated to public safety. And it just kind of falls in line with this conversation we've been having, and maybe transformation somewhat of Gloria being like tough on crime, you know, not locking up laundry detergent, but locking up criminals who steal laundry detergent. So he made a big point about that, Scott Wall did. And then he also obviously talked about retention issues. So I'm sure those are some of the biggest things on his mind.
Yeah, this will be the first police chief that Mayor Todd Gloria himself got to a point, and so there will be probably a tighter connection between those two. We will see how it goes. Well, every day you learn something new, and I'm proud to say I taught you guys something new. You did not know there's no sales tax on food.
Okay, some background here. You know, I go shopping, I do some major damage. I try not to look at my receipt, so I never really pay attention. But thanks to you, I found out there's like this wealth of information.
On the receipt.
On the receipt. Yes. It literally says like non-taxable food item.
Yeah, there's a whole list of different things that the state of California does not tax for use or sales. One of them is food that you're gonna eat in the future.
Yes.
Now, if you're sitting down to eat a hot meal, that's gonna get taxed. But if you're taking it home to prepare it later, it's not gonna get taxed.
Yeah.
There's animal stuff to feed animals that you're gonna, as long as you're gonna eat the animal later, you're not gonna pay the tax.
As if like Mexican moms needed another reason to be like, hay comida en la casa, you know?
Exactly.
It's the worst. It's so triggering.
Yeah.
So all of those loopholes are on the receipt?
I don't know, but it does break down what's taxable, right?
Uh-huh. Right, like next to the item, it'll say NF, and the N is non-taxable, and then F is food.
Well, in my defense, I just don't read the receipts.
Well, the San Diego City Council is on track, has not yet, but is on track to put a 1 cent, 1 percentage point increase to the sales tax that is charged in the city of San Diego on the November ballot for voters to consider. Mayor Todd Gloria and City Councilman Raul Campillo are putting this forward. They're the champions of this. Basically, hey, we hear that you want all these things in the city, more services, better roads, all those things. We got a big deficit coming up. This is the way to do it. The tax right now is 7.75%. There is already another half-cent sales tax on the November ballot to raise taxes for transit, transportation, roads, highways, and pothole improvement and fixing, and to connect to the airport and all that stuff, the trolley system. That is already on the November ballot, and so this 1 cent would take the city of San Diego's taxes to 8.75%. So if you buy something for $100, you pay $8.75 more.
But this one doesn't make any promises about where it'll go specifically.
Yeah, that's crucial. So this, remember, there are two ways to raise taxes in this state. One is considered a special tax where you say, like, I'm going to do exactly this with this tax increase. And that is like build a stadium, you know, roads, specific things like that. That requires a 2/3 majority support of voters. But if you just say, like, the government needs more money, that only requires a 50% plus one vote of the public. And that's what they would like to do with this. Again, it has to go to the full city council. Seems pretty clear that it will pass there. I think I have not actually run across, maybe Vivian Moreno, maybe a couple of people are going to be hostile to it, but it is going forward. Henry Foster won the city council race in Monica Montgomery Stepp's district that she was leaving to go to the county supervisor seat. One of the big reasons he won is that he had the support of the Municipal Employees Association, the largest union of city employees at the city of San Diego. And he had that support in part because he was enthusiastic and ready to articulate the case for this very tax.
Another person making the case was Council President Shawnee La Rivera. He told the UT, quote, study after study has shown there is no amount of efficiency or streamlining that will fill the gaps this city has as a result of decades of underinvestment, he said.
Okay. Let's just do a quick catch up of all the things that are happening in the world of city taxes.
So much.
So one is we voted on a tax in March 2020 to raise the hotel room tax to pay for an expansion of the convention center and homeless services and road repair. And that got more than 60% of the vote, but not 2/3. However, as a citizens initiative, there is a legal argument still going through the courts that it did pass. And so that could happen. Mm-hmm. And that's very likely, I think, to happen at this point. And so that could start bringing more money. The city also got authorization from voters to start charging people for trash collection on city streets. Right now, if you can get your trash bin to the curb, the city collects it for free without a particularly special fee on top of it. Now, it's not free. Obviously, pay taxes that pay for that service right now. But that fee is now being studied. They just passed a study to determine what services people want, what they're willing to pay, and all that such, so they can enact that fee in the next couple of years. That's happening. There is a proposal from Sean Elo Rivera, the council president, to also start taxing people's properties, parcels, for stormwater improvements. And that is likely to make its way through the city council as well, because of after the floods, there was like, we've got to address this deficit in stormwater infrastructure, the culverts, the pumps, the channels, all of those things need to be built and maintained. And so that's going forward, and now this. And so there's a lot that have happened and that will happen, and it's going to be interesting.
So off the top of your head, could you add all of this up and give us a percentage of where we would be at if every one of these taxes went through, including the one mired in litigation?
Well, you mean like payers or like city like receipts?
How much taxpayers would pay?
Well, it's really hard to say. Like the hotel tax, you're not going to stay in a hotel in San Diego anytime soon. Right?
Okay, unless you staycation.
So it's a little different.
Yeah. That is such a silly sort of constellation of issues. Convention center, homelessness services, and roads.
They wanted to build a convention center, and they're like, let's tack on some things that other people want as well.
That's right. Okay.
So they're like,
we want to build this thing that nobody cares about. Let's tack on things that people do care about.
I love how much you hate the convention center.
So
it's not that I don't hate it. I just don't think about it.
Yeah. Well,
have you like walked up those stairs and
the thing about the convention center is that it's on its own island that's literally separated, feels like, from the rest of the city. It's almost like the hotel world built this little place that us San Diegans aren't supposed to be at.
That area has been quarantined, and rightly so. There's no purpose for us to go there.
Every once in a while, there's something going on there.
When was the last time you went to the convention center?
My son wanted to go to the Minecraft festival that was happening there, and it was fun for people who like Minecraft.
Okay.
There's your response.
So that's kind of a different thing here.
Yeah. So that's
unless you staycation here.
So there's a lot of things like the parcel tax for stormwater. That's not, if you're a renter, you're not going to necessarily feel that. Obviously, everything's inflationary and it would bump up the rents over time. But that's a tax on actual parcels. And it could be even like super complex about like parcels that have a lot of impermeable land versus parcels that have like a lot of forestry or something like that. So
that's something that's confused me. I mean, maybe I'm off base here, but you would assume that land in areas that are maybe more low income would have less permeable surfaces. I mean, is that a crazy thing to think?
I think it's kind of the opposite, right? They've established that there's more tree cover and more open space in like wealthier neighborhoods. And I think a lot of poor neighborhoods have just like vast areas of asphalt.
That's what I was trying to say. Yeah. So wouldn't you expect a tax like that to hit poorer people the hardest?
Oh, it could. There's going to be a bunch of discussions about that sort of caveat. Like, do you give people benefit if they've already built stormwater infrastructure for their new buildings? do you give them a benefit for their income levels or whatever else? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big questions surrounding that. And that's why I'm very eager to see the actual proposal go forward. But
lots of algorithms be written.
And then the sales tax, yeah, that's a big, they say it could bring in about $400 million over time to the city government, which, you know, again, struggling with a $200 million deficit. Obviously, the employee groups want it to pass in part so they can continue to try to raise their own wages, which they believe is necessary to keep the city competitive. And others would say it's just, you know, selfish. But that's the big debate that's going to be happening. So I think the sales tax for Sandag, obviously, that's a big debate also about, are those the things that we need to spend the money on at the Sandag? There's a lot of roads and road improvement plans in that too. And a lot of people are concerned about the state of the roads. So.
So what you're saying is there are lots of taxes, but not a whole lot of certainty about what exactly they'll look like.
But can we go down another road?
This whole segment is like that meme of the girl who's like thinking, and then there's like all this
the calculations
happening.
Yeah. This is where Scott thrives, though.
Yeah. Let's see, Shine.
The November ballot could fundamentally transform all of this and everything we know about how taxes can be raised in this state of California. And I think it's important for people to start wrapping their mind around all of the things that could happen in November statewide and how they could affect these very discussions going forward. Mm-hmm. Do you want to get into that?
I do, but I always find it really frustrating that some of the most boring things are the most important in our society.
I know.
Thank God we have Scott Lewis here to explain them to us.
You might just... It might be that you're starting to develop what Andy developed over time, which is just a mild hatred of me. and thus, like, you're just mad that I have something valuable to say. That's, and it just gets worse and worse over time.
That is so, certainly not it. I just have a mild hatred of the things that excite you.
Okay. See, it's starting to get close.
It is so close.
Let's do this. There are three propositions on the November ballot across the state of California that could change everything. Let's start with this one. ACA 1. It'll probably be called like Prop 1 or something like that. It's ACA 1 right now. That means it's a constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm. And it says that if you want to raise taxes to build stuff, you can do that with 55% of the vote as opposed to 2/3. Mm-hmm. So if you want to build a stadium, if you want to build affordable housing, if you want to build roads, if you want to build, if you want to build parks, if you want to do anything that's building of infrastructure, you can raise a sales tax, you could raise a parcel tax, you could raise a property tax. By the way, a parcel tax is a fee on the actual property. The property tax is a function of how much the property's worth. Got it?
Okay. So ACA 1, easier to pass taxes to build infrastructure.
Right. The next one is the opposite. They want to make it harder to pass taxes. So this one's called the Taxpayer Protection Act, and it's put forward by the Business Roundtable. Now, this group wants to make it harder to pass tax. Remember, I explained earlier that there's this loophole that if you have a citizens initiative, you can raise taxes for a special purpose with only 50% of the vote plus one, right? Yeah. So that was a big deal, and it's passed. There's been several taxes passed across the state based on them being citizens' initiatives that citizens put together, usually some special interests put together the signatures to get them on the ballot, and then citizens approve them. And the court had ruled if you have citizens who want to do that, all they need to do to pass any kind of law is get a majority of people. And if that law means they have to, that it's going to raise taxes, they can do that. This initiative says a few things, but the primary thing it says is that if you want to raise a special tax, no matter how it got on the ballot, it has to be a 2/3 vote. Hmm. It also says that if the state wants to raise a tax, right now all the state has to do is pass it at the state government, it would need a 2/3 vote of both the Assembly and the Senate, and it would need a vote of the people. Hmm. And so there's this lithium extraction tax that was passed in Imperial that was passed for the state that has benefited or will benefit Imperial Valley. There's a lot of angst and interest in that because they want that to pass. Well, this law also says that anything that's passed since January 2022 that doesn't conform to that sort of threshold that they want passed, those are also thrown out. So literal taxes that have been collected for the last 2 years could be thrown out with this Business Roundtable Taxpayer Protection Act. Mm. It also has another thing that is really significant in the world of development. Right now, one of the reasons that people aren't building a lot of homes in unincorporated areas of the county, in places that aren't part of cities, is that they have to calculate the vehicle's miles traveled of what those developments will create. So if you build a bunch of homes, how many vehicle miles traveled will that create? And if it's a high number, the county's passed a very strict sort of threshold that says like those developments get a major fee attached to them and have thus made those developments impossible, or at least they don't work out for a lot of developers to build. Mm-hmm. And the Building Industry and Association and others have said, like, this is constraining our ability to meet the housing demand, all that stuff, but it's also protecting unincorporated areas from development, right?
And so does it specifically call that out as one of the functions, or is it just by virtue of it retroactively eliminating
those
taxes?
No, it calls it out specifically in the Taxpayer Protection Act.
It's like they threw in all this stuff.
That they can't do that. In fact, I think that's one of the primary motivators of it, that that's one of the key things they want to make sure that local governments do not do anymore, and they're just dressing it up with a bunch of other stuff as well. But that would also eliminate the possibility of them doing actual vehicle mile travels taxes like the driving fee we used to talk about that Sandag used to think about putting on here, right?
That one's a lot, but
we're gonna do a little bit of a recap here. ACA 1, easier to pass taxes to build infrastructure.
Stuff. Yes, good job.
Taxpayer Protection Act, basically a grab bag of all of these different things that retroactively eliminates taxes and eliminates loopholes that make passing taxes easier, but also adds new loopholes to make passing taxes harder. And then also, you know, why not? Let's eliminate vehicle mile travel tax as well.
Very good.
Hey, I'm learning.
Good job. Wow. All right, now.
Okay, wait. If they have to give, let's say it passes, do you just like get a check in the mail for the taxes you paid?
No, they just.
Because I would like to know if I'm about to get free money.
That'll affect my vote too.
Yeah, no, that would help it probably pass. However, no, I think it just means like they have to stop. And I think there's going to be a lot of court cases about that. Like, how do you just like cut it off like that? Like, governments do not like to stop getting money that they've been getting. Makes it's sense. Very difficult.
I mean, neither do I.
Breaks their brains. Yeah, exactly.
No one does.
Yeah. So, this is my favorite one, ACA 13. Now, this was pushed by our own representative, Chris Ward, Assemblyman Chris Ward. And this one is a direct response to the previous one I just described. This one says, this is so good. This one says that if you want to change the threshold of what it takes to have something else happen, your ballot measure has to hit that threshold too.
What?
So if you're, it's just like, just any ballot measure that's out there that wants to raise the threshold for passing taxes or anything, that it itself has to hit that threshold.
Yeah. So basically, this, in the world where ACA 13 is law, the Taxpayer Protection Act would have to meet the 2/3 voter approval mark that it is requiring the taxes that are within its kind of like purview to reach. Is that correct?
Exactly. And so it's literally targeted at that, but it's benignly worded about something different, but that's what it's doing. And it says it's meant to make it harder to pass efforts to make it harder to pass taxes.
So it's like subtweeting the Taxpayer Protection Act.
It's very meta. It's very, but do you want to go another step deeper?
I don't know that I do. I mean, we're like reaching Inception level here.
Okay. Well, do the recap now as you
understand. Okay. At ACA 1, it makes it easier to pass taxes to build stuff. Taxpayer Protection Act, I really don't want to go through that whole thing again because it was quite long. ACA 13 is basically like a conversation with the Taxpayer Protection Act, where the Taxpayer Protection Act is saying this, and ACA is like, haha, okay, but let's hold you to that standard as well.
Exactly. So here's the greatest part of this.
Okay.
What if they all pass?
I am very curious about that.
Anarchy.
Dogs and cats sleeping together, mass hysteria.
It's going to be like legislative Y2K. That was a real big deal. People just worked very hard to avert the worst possibility.
You know, unlike you two, I was alive that night, and I remember being very afraid.
I was alive too. Just don't be mad that I was 10, okay?
You were what, 2?
Not 2.
5. She couldn't even play T-ball. She was like T-ball. It's crazy.
I was still in Mexico.
Okay.
Why two dos?
Idos ka?
Idos ka.
That's awesome. Yeah. Idos ka. Okay. If they all pass, then you have to look at parts of it that compete with each other. So if ACA 1 passes, but the Taxpayer Protection Act passes, then the Taxpayer Protection Act conflicts with all of ACA 1. ACA 1 doesn't exist unless ACA 1 gets more votes.
Ah.
So if they both pass and ACA 1 gets more votes, then only the provisions of the Roundtable Taxpayer Protection Act that don't conflict with ACA 1 stand and continue. So
they could still get away with the vehicle miles traveled elimination.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or the restriction on the legislature, all those things. And so I think like that'd be really interesting.
But not the one that cancels the taxes.
Hold on.
So this is so confusing.
So if that one passes, that directly conflicts with the business roundtable one. And so the one with the most votes would win. If the one with the most votes is ACA 13, then that means the other one needs to get 2/3 of the vote and it would seem like it would get rid of it.
Whoa. Like the math is mathing.
I don't think I can. I'm a little confused.
God damn it. How could you be confused? This is clear as f***ing day.
Okay, so ACA 13.
Okay, every single voter in California needs to listen to this podcast because no one else is talking about this.
It's wild
this
how
wild.
When I was like trying, somebody told me like, well, the reason stormwater could possibly happen is because they think that ACA 1 will pass. And I was like, what? And they said, yeah, because ACA 1 makes it easier to pass these taxes at 55% of the vote. By the way, that's been the threshold that schools have had for a long time. And they've passed so many tax increases on property to build new schools, especially in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We've had like 4 or 5 over the last 20 years. And so they're like, so this would make it easier to do the stormwater one. And I was like, wait, what? And I just learned about ACA 1, and then I learned about the Taxpayer Protection Act, and then I learned about ACA 13, and I'm like, this is crazy.
I'm like learning the details of all three of this at the same time.
Yes.
So I feel like Neo getting like Kung Fu downloaded into his brain, but
yeah.
I'm tripping over myself.
Yeah.
So one question I have, if ACA 13 were to pass, is that retroactive in the same way that the taxpayers... Protection Act is?
So this is another thing. Apparently the people who have put it on the ballot believe that it would be immediately implemented, which means it would affect the other things on the ballot, and that all of them would be immediately implemented, but not retroactive, but immediately effective. So
Okay. So
the moment it was certified, it would be the same moment that the other one was certified, and they would then the power of each would start to become law.
So if Taxpayer Protection Act passes and ACA 13 passes, it would invalidate?
So if they both pass, then you have to look at which one gets more votes. If ACA 13 gets more votes, then its requirement that anything that raises the threshold for anything else must itself hit that threshold means that all the parts of the Taxpayer Protection Act that require a 2/3 threshold to do anything would only be implemented if they had a 2/3 threshold for that ballot measure.
Okay.
And that means there'd be still some things like the vehicle mile traveled thing that could remain in effect.
You know, for a second here, I was getting pretty interested and excited about this, God. But I'm back to really not liking this
Come
stuff
on,
at all.
Dude. You were with me. Go with it.
I was
Your
with
heart
you.
Heart is in it.
Just be happy for what we shared at this one moment.
Okay.
You know?
There is, and that brings me to this fourth part that, yes, this would have a direct impact on all of the things we've just talked about. That if there's especially a stormwater tax on the ballot, it could be easier to pass.
Oh, God, I forgot about all of the local tax measures, too. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, this really is, I was never very good at math, and I feel like I need an algorithm, an equation to explain how all of these strange things interact.
Here's the one way to think about it for the normals out there is there a lot of people are still like, why did the Chargers leave? Like, why is Denver able to build a stadium? Why is Arlington, Texas able to build a stadium? Why is Indiana able to build and we can't? We're a functioning civilization. Why can't we have a stadium that keeps the football team here? The reason the Chargers left, the most important reason why the Chargers left is that it takes 2/3 of the vote to get a special tax. All these other places got special taxes to build stadiums at only 50% plus one requirement to build these taxes. So hotel taxes, sales taxes in Colorado, food and hotel taxes in Indiana, they all were used to build stadiums. Here, they couldn't do it because of 2/3 of the vote. And now with this, if this were in effect, ACA 1 in particular, they could have got it with 55% of the vote. They probably could have done it.
So if ACA 1 were to have been in effect a decade ago, the Chargers would still be here.
Yes.
I don't like ACA 1 anymore. I don't like, I'm so glad the Chargers left.
We've got Mackenzie Elmer, our environment reporter in the podcast room here. Hey, Mac.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you've been writing a lot about some drama happening with a binational sewage treatment plant. You've got redacted documents, Congress setting aside more money to fix it, and people entering the chat. Tell us what's been going on.
Yes, binational border wastewater treatment plant sounds super sexy and fun to talk about, right? Okay, well, what we're talking about here is basically the way that San Diego and Tijuana are set up geographically. The city of Tijuana, it spills a lot of sewage and wastewater, and it spills over the border into San Diego. This has been a problem of geography, a problem of just like the city of Tijuana, like growing super fast without proper like pipes put in place and neighborhoods popping up and places where they didn't have infrastructure. And so what did we do? In the 90s, the U.S. and Mexico spent some money and they built a treatment plant to try to just like funnel some of this sewage into a like facility that will treat it. And then prevent some of that pollution coming into San Diego. Because otherwise what happens is all that sewage really finds its way into the Tijuana River, which flows from Tijuana into San Diego. And then basically belches out all of that sewage below Imperial Gross. Beach. Yeah, and then the beach is closed.
That seems super logical. I'm sure that over the intervening years, both high-functioning democracies have done a really good job of keeping it up.
Spectacular job. Yeah, that's why it's broken right now.
No.
Yeah, so that's one piece of the drama. Let's back up a little bit to the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Back in 2019 or something, the Trump administration was like, we're going to make a new NAFTA. We're going to make a new trade deal with Mexico. And we're going to find some money to give to the environment. Surprise. Mm-hmm. And the Trump administration was like, we're down for this.
They passed USMCA.
USMCA. USMCA. Yeah, the U.S. I've never actually heard that. The USMCA.
I'm the only one who says it.
Yeah, well, now everyone will
NAFTA
say
NAFTA was such a good thing. It rolled off the tongue. And then they're like, no, now it's the USMCA. I was like, no, come on. Give us something to say. It's the USMCA.
USMCA.
Freaking brilliant. Yeah, so they were we're going to pass
just
the
call them brilliant.
USMCA. They passed the USMCA, and they said, they kind of negotiated back then. They're like, how much money do we want to give to maybe solve some of this environmental border problems between U.S. and Mexico? Looking back at some of the like newspaper articles from back then, they were like, okay, how about 400 million? And then the Trump administration was like, nah, how about like 300 million? And then we're like, okay. And they passed it and everybody was like, yay, $300 million. Wow. It could go like to fix a lot of things because there's a lot of needs because the border, you know, is not just Tijuana and San Diego. It's the whole border.
Right? Well, so. Remember that there was that whole like 6 months where they had no idea what they were going to spend the money on.
That's what I was getting to. So they were like, okay, we have $300 million. What are we going to do? And everybody wanted a piece of it, right? And so there was like all this drama, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh my gosh, who wants what? And then San Diego, it was declared through whatever route. I don't know. I wasn't here for that part. But they said, okay, we're going to give it to San Diego. San Diego's got a lot of needs. Let's fix the sewage problem because there was, well, maybe because there were lawsuits happening. Basically, everybody was suing the federal government and said, hey, you're not fixing the sewage problem. We're closing our beaches. You know, Serge Dedina down in Imperial Beach, former mayor, was causing a huge firestorm. So probably all that political will pulled that money to San Diego. Okay, 2020, I get on the beat. The money's in hand. Basically, the story from that point on was, what's the EPA going to spend this on? And we went through a whole process, which they actually went through before. Like, we keep kind of restudying this issue to figure out what we need to spend it on. So this was supposed to be like the final grand decision. And then they went through like a whole study plan. The EPA was like holding all these public meetings and it was like really nerdy and technical and it was all about infrastructure and like poop and stuff. And then
fun.
So fun. And then finally, and also there was also this like, oh, are you going to spend money in Mexico? Because like, honestly, the problem really lies in the city of Tijuana. We need to fix the city of Tijuana in terms of like all the infrastructure that's broken. We need to kind of like lift that city up so that we don't have sewage to have to clean.
Yeah, let's be clear. A big part of the problem is that Tijuana's up on a plateau above us, and a lot of people don't have toilets that connect to a sewage system. And so all of that sewage runs into the canyons and then flows out to us.
Right. And the like infrastructure is built. It's not big enough. So there's like pipes that aren't big enough. Like things just overflow and just get messy. Basically, the U.S. was like, nah, that's not like we're not going to really spend a whole lot of money of that in Mexico. Maybe later, maybe after the $300 million that we spend. But they also got like Mexico to commit some money. We have to like put that on the back burner. But this $300 million was supposed to go towards what the EPA decided. In one big fanfare, they're like, we're going to expand or make bigger or be able to treat more this treatment plant that we have built in the 90s that we were talking about earlier. And so everyone was like, great idea, let's do it. And
can
then
we take a second.
Yes,
this is
please.
This is the place. When you drive out to Borderfield State Park, there's a little road at the border, and it's this big facility right there at the border, and it's overseen by that binational commission, right? There's like representatives from Mexico and the U.S. on it.
Here's another fun acronym, which does not roll off the tongue, the IBWC. Well, maybe it rolls off the tongue a little bit more. IBWC and USCMA. And so the IBWC is the International Boundary and Water Commission, and it's this federal agency. It's like a little-known federal agency. It actually sometimes says that it's part of the State Department, and some days it says it's like its own thing.
Because it's based on vibes.
Yeah, totally based on vibes. Mexico also has an IBWC, but it's called CELA in Spanish, the translation. So there's actually like these two commissioners that are sort of like treaty making people between the two countries, but only on issues of like boundary demarcation, like where is the actual line, and then like water issues. And this has kind of expanded over the years. So that's kind of confusing, and I think it trips up a lot of people that this what this IBWC is. But they have been kind of on guard, for better lack of a better term, because everybody's been suing them because they're the ones that run this plant. They're the ones that are supposed to like keep everything in working order, and it has been not working very well, clearly. And then sort of like as the EPA is like putting together these plans to like, what are we gonna? How are we gonna build expand the plant? Let's figure this out. I started to kind of hear like during these public meetings, like the IBWC that runs the plant, they're like in charge of the actual facility. They were like, so we kind of need to like look at our plant and see what's broken or what's not broken, and just kind of like check it out, make sure it's all good to go. And I'm like, okay. And then it would kind of like they come back again. They'd be like, well, so we did this study, and so we kind of have like some problems with our plant, and like, it might kind of take up some of this money that we have, you know, that whole $300 million. And EPA was kind of like not really they weren't like, what? But it kind of felt from my sources and from as I was like talking to people that this was sort of a surprise in the process. And I still don't understand how no one thought to look at this before Usmaca or during Usmaca or like.
Yeah, let's be clear. Like you broke the story that they were sitting there saying like, we should expand this plant. And then finally they had to admit that they were in no such shape, right?
Like, right. Yeah. I will say though that I've been through two commissioners. The former one was Jane Harkins, appointed by Trump. This current one, appointed by Biden, is Maria Elena Giner. And in that transition, I never was able to get a tour of this wastewater treatment plant before under the Trump administration's pick. I don't know what it was. They seemed kind of like, maybe because of the lawsuits, there's just a lot of politics going on and everybody was really closed up. Giner comes in, the lawsuits get settled. The plant is like open for tours and they have like this operations manager who's just like answering calls and like it was a complete night and day switch in terms of just like access to the IBWC, which was really interesting. And I think that is important to note. But still, it was a shock. And so I break the story that like Senator Padilla comes, he tours the plant and they're like, yeah, this plant is like all messed up. And they like drop this like fact sheet and they say, this is how much money we need to fix it. And it was like millions and millions of dollars or like, and actually the needs of the entire border are like upwards of $1 billion, not just our plant. And we were like, oh crap. So that happens. The other congressional members are shocked and scrambling and they're like, whoa, crap. Like our whole exciting plan of how we're going to fix the sewage like crisis is destroyed because they need to use all of our money from Usmaca on fixing the plant. Now what are we going to do? Now we can't even claim that we're fixing this entire thing.
So they had all this hope about doing something more that would improve the situation. And basically they've discovered, oh no, this is just to keep the status quo maybe functioning.
Yeah, like this is just to keep it running. Because right now it's the water that they shoot into the ocean is violating the Clean Water Act, violating the federal government's own standards. So the federal government is breaking its laws. Basically, and they need to fix that first. So
you can't grow until you fix what's broken.
Right, right.
All right, good. Well, now we're into the present situation, and the local congressional delegation wanted to make up some ground.
Totally. Yeah. So then there was this big scramble in Congress, like, we need to find more money. Ah. And, you know, Congress is kind of like struggles to funk right now with money, with the budget. Like they're trying to just pass last fiscal year's budget and they need to start the next fiscal year's budget like now, today. So what happened this week was we heard that there was going to be some funding put into the final spending bill. Like, right. Like Congress is finally going to give us some extra money that we need to fix the plant. And it got kind of like caught up in a bit of like brief politics. And we still don't know like whether it will make it to the final bill. But today we found out that Senator Padilla and the other Democrats have like secured, or they're celebrating that they have secured like $103 million, which isn't all the money that we need to fix the plant, but it's something to get it like from, you know, breaking maybe like federal laws. Mm-hmm.
Well, we say Democrat, but it has to pass the Republican House.
It goes to the House first, yes. Right. So the Republican House has to pass it first.
And so we talked and you did some reporting that Daryl Issa was poking around on this, as you said, entered the chat, right? He starts asking a bunch of questions and there was for a little while, some of the Democrats locally were like, what are you doing, dude?
Right, yeah. Sort of out of the woodwork came Representative Issa, like, sending these letters to the commissioner of the IBWC, like, what exactly like went down? Like, why is this thing broken? And how did it get here to this point? Like, how did we not know about this before? I don't know. I thought they were pretty good questions.
You had some of those questions.
Yeah, I also had these questions. And then, you know, we reported the answers. Like, we got some of the answers from the commissioner, blah, blah, blah. But still, like, there was this, like, fear that maybe ISA would like get the ear of the appropriations, you know, like the Republicans in the House and try to like turn them against passing this funding for the IBWC. It doesn't appear. I mean, we are celebrating that the money is now like, I guess, officially in the spending bill, but it still has to go through all of the different.
It's maddening to follow this sometimes because they're always like, we included it, but it's never like clear. Does that mean it's done? Because then it needs to be like appropriate and approved and actually then like spent and all of these steps that it takes to get it done. So we are at like the midpoint, right? Like it hasn't passed, but it seems like there's a general agreement on both sides of the aisle that it should go forward.
Yeah, I feel like I had to like take School of Rock pro like classes this week just to understand where the money is. But like basically it's what they were trying to do was basically attach this funding to like anything that moved. It could have been like Homeland Security, military. As far as I understand it, it's in an appropriations bill for the foreign affairs like chunk of appropriations. It's like rooted in something. And if it passes both houses, IBWC should have their money. And I just want to like, I keep iterating with everyone I talk to about this, that like, this isn't how a wastewater treatment plant, this isn't how like sewage gets treated in like any other part of civilization. You don't usually have to like go to Congress to get money to help to like fix your wastewater treatment plant. Usually you pay for it on your monthly bill, right? Like I'm paying, I don't know, what, the city of San Diego or something to like treat my toilet water. And then I don't have to worry about it. Right.
Like, in fact, it's removed from the political process just so that you don't get to mess with it.
Right. But
like they protect water rates and sewer rates from political processes, from voters, because they know it's so important to deal with that we can't be messing with it.
Totally. But now this, we're talking about the one country treating the sewage of another country, and Congress has to like approve every single dollar that goes into the process of treating it. And it's just clearly not a functional way.
Well, it's a fascinating series of stories. You can read them all at VOSD.org/environment. That's VOSD.org/environment. Mac, thanks for following it and holding them accountable.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego. Just straight, I'm just doing it. Support our whole team and this podcast for our spring fundraising campaign, because it's the most popular public affairs and podcast in San Diego because you, or people like you, make it possible with your donations and contributions. And you can join them if you're racked with guilt that this thing you enjoy so much and that you love and you need every Saturday would only happen if people like you gave money. And if you give, you can be part of that and feel that joy, that thing in your heart that keeps you going every day, that you're a part of this. VOSD.org/give. That's VOSD.org/give. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-Chief at Voice San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafania is our Managing Editor. Jacob McQuinney is our Education Reporter. Nate John's our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.